It started with me just hating inefficiencies I saw on our team. You know, we had our CRM, we had a phone system, we had a task management system, we had Google Drive, we had this, we had that. And an easy example is pictures from the seller were stuck in our phone system. Sometimes our manual workflows would work right and they would download them one at a time, then put them somewhere. Sometimes they wouldn't. But then we end up later on, we flipped it and Amy is our realtor, would say, okay, here's the forms you have to fill out. How's the roof? Shit, I don't remember. How am I going to find that out? Okay, I have to go through transcripts. I have to go through notes in multiple systems because we may have found out when we were in the rehab how old it was. We may have found out here. We may have found out there. And I hated wasting my time. I hated seeing my team waste their time. And it really drove me nuts when somebody would, you know, not put street in an address somewhere, but they put it over here. And then we try to have Zapier pull something and nothing matches up. It killed me. And so I just started making tools to help ourselves run more efficiently, to pull those together. And I decided I was going to make something that we were only going to use internally.
Hey there, welcome back to the Pursuit of Property podcast. Kate and I are ecstatic today because we've got the big event this weekend up at Table Mountain, and we had the opportunity to have a guest come on. He flew out from Oklahoma City. His name is John. He is here today to talk about both his experience in real estate, his CRM platform that he works on, and then also share some nuggets for the new investors here in the Central Valley. So John Nolan with Pete, welcome to the pod.
Thanks. I appreciate you having me. Excited.
How was the flight in?
It was good. It was nice and easy. A little bit of turbulence, but hey, that's what happens when you fly your own plane.
That's it. I was going to say, not many people are flying their own plane. Give some backstory to that. When did you get a plane?
I got this plane a little over a year ago. One before that, I had a year or so before that. But flying was always a dream of mine. I always wanted to be a pilot. Took a couple lessons when I was in high school. Loved it, but I mean, it's expensive. And so I had a mind block that I'd never be able to do it. A few years ago, my wife Amy got me a gift certificate for Christmas to have flying lessons. And fast forward, she loves it. Our kids love it. We go all over the place and it's very, very nice to have that flexibility and not have to go through TSA and wait and do this and do that. We just go out, pull our plane out of the hangar, take off.
That's so sick. We were talking on the drive over here from the casino, and I mean, you said you show up half the time, you don't even have to deal with anybody, and you just get in the plane and fly on over.
Yep.
That has to be crazy. And you said you've always wanted to be a pilot?
Always. I grew up next to an Air Force base. And so I always saw pilots, always saw planes, and that was what I wanted. But kind of like Notre Dame, I wanted to go to Notre Dame, I thought at one point, but had to have really good grades. Kind of the same with Air Force Academy.
Yep.
So that ended up not being in my cards, but yeah, I always wanted to be a pilot. It was a dream I always had.
What was the process like in actually getting your pilot's license?
There's a ground test you have to take. You have to study through. You have to go through that. Then there's a lot of flight training you have to do. They take you through very specific scenarios. Like what happens if you're flying and you lose your engine? What are you going to do? Because it happens. If you're at this altitude, if you're at that altitude, and it takes a while. Sometimes people take it out, you know, extend it out and do it over years, and that takes a lot more flight hours. Sometimes people do it really quick.
That's what I was going to say. How quick were you able to go from start to finish?
I did mine and I want to say 11 months, but I almost did mine twice because I was almost complete going through what most people think of as a normal plane, a Cessna. But we had bought our own plane and I wanted to get more training in it. And it was a high performance, had retractable gears, was a lot more to do it. And I went, you know what, before I get my family in this with me, I want as much training as possible. So I restarted all my training over in that plane with a different company. And so it took me about 11 months, but you can do it in just a couple of months if you've got the time.
Damn, that's so cool. And being in Oklahoma City, you've got kind of good access to a lot of different parts of the country fairly easily, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're very, very central. I've flown up as far as in the U.S., flew up to Teterboro, which is next to Manhattan and on the New Jersey side. Long story, I'll make it short. We flew up, landed. My sister and brother-in-law who live up there picked us up, took us to Broadway, took Amy to a Broadway show for our anniversary. Sister, brother-in-law picked us back up, took us back to Teterboro. We flew out.
Wow.
I mean, that's never so in my cool. life imagined I'd be able to do something like that.
Wow.
I just got chills.
I saw that. That's so sick. I think that's, it's not necessarily in my cards, but the idea of seeing somebody who like wants to be a pilot, does it, and then you can take your wife to Broadway and just on your own. It's like you took an Uber almost.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not same level, but
yeah.
But. Well, and the cool thing about us is Amy loves it just as much as I do.
That's awesome.
And a lot of wives are like, no, I'm never getting in that plane with you. Never happening. They'll, like, if one goes in the plane, then the other one will fly commercial so that they're not in the plane together. No, she's with me. The day I got my certificate, she was out there with me that day.
That's so cool.
Dude, so always wanted to be a pilot. You mentioned in high school, you did a little bit here and there. You got exposed to it some more. Mm-hmm. Then you mentioned wanting to go to Notre Dame, potentially, out of high school. What did life look like getting out of high school for you?
Oh, good question. Senior year in high school, I decided I didn't want to go to college. You know, my mom was the first person in her family to ever go to college, much less graduate. She was a teacher for before when I was young. So that's what I was supposed to do. Decided, nope, I'm not going to do it. They harped. Eventually, I said, fine. I'm from Oklahoma. Dad, you like OU. I'll go to Oklahoma State just to piss you off. So got out, graduated high school, went to Oklahoma State, and had way too much fun. Way too much fun. A semester and a half in, I was going to fail all my classes. So I left, joined the Marine Corps, spent just shy of 5 years in the Marine Corps at that point.
And at what time frame is this when you got out of the Marine Corps?
I got out November of 2003.
And November of 2003, I mean, were you over in the Middle East or?
No, unfortunately, my unit went, had gone in a comeback earlier in 2003 with Iraqi Freedom. I was a few months post-op on shoulder surgery and I wasn't allowed to go. It was a tough time for me, but I was out in the end of 2003. And then I ended up going overseas later as a civilian, contracted from 2004 to 2006. Tell you what, you want a better appreciation of what we have here in the U.S.? Go somewhere like that and see people fight over clean water.
Mm. And you get into 2006. I mean, what was it that got you out of that world?
Amy. My wife, now my wife, Amy. I'd gone through, I know divorce is easy. It was fairly easy divorce, but I'd gone through a divorce that internally was very tough. And I was going to be over there as long as I could. I made great money. Didn't care if I was getting shot at, didn't bother me at all. But met Amy, that's a whole other story, but, she didn't ask me to come back, but I wanted to come back. So came back, went back to school, was laughed at as being the old guy first day back in class. 'Cause I was all 26. So
where'd you end up going back to school?
Oklahoma State.
See, yep. I figured by repping the hat.
Keep pissing off dad.
Yep. Well, Oklahoma State goes further with Pete. Went back to school, finished out that semester, but I was having a hard time adjusting to normal life. Went, got a job with a pharmacy software company, and I was there for about 10 years. And while I was there, I finished my bachelor's and ended up getting my master's. I was a certified information security manager, all kinds of IT development stuff. And I can just go on forever, but Amy is what brought me back. I had to come back to be with her.
Mm.
And then 10 years go by in the IT space. Mm-hmm. It sounds like a very corporate type structure. Are you climbing the ladder over the course of that 10 years? What does that kind of 9-to-5 look like for you?
Good question. It was a family business.
Nice.
Transparency, it was Amy's family's business now. I started working there before she and I were married, but I started at the bottom. I went out and installed our software in pharmacies, like your mom and pop pharmacies, not your CVS's, your Walgreens, but your mom and pop pharmacies. And then I did work my way up, got into development, got into IT. my big, big moment there was we came up with a mobile app so people could request refills online on iOS.
Nice.
Before Walgreens had theirs. They released right after ours, but we had it for the small mom and pop pharmacies before Walgreens. That was huge.
Wow.
And it was my program that I developed. So that was cool. But yeah, when I left, I was the vice president of IT. They had sold. It was a good time for me to move on. Our kids had a lot of health issues and needed some time flexibility. It was Amy or I. Well, they really wanted Amy to stay. I was burnt out at that point. And so I got out and we'd been dabbling in real estate and I got into it full time.
What did that look like, dabbling in real estate while you're both working?
We had had one rental. By that time, we had had it for 3 or 4 years and we had sold it. And we had started our first flip. And I did most of the work on that first flip. I knew that scaling and like over time, that was not what was sustainable. But I don't like for people to be able to BS me. I want to know what things are like. So I did most of the work myself. I am handy and I enjoyed it to a point. But I did most of that myself. We made decent money on it and just kind of went from there and then started buying rentals, started accumulating those. Couldn't get wholesalers to send me deals because they all had their few guys that they always send other deals to. And I was going to the RIAs and the meetups and saying, guys, I have cash, like cash, not BS cash, no contingency. I have cash in the bank. I want to buy properties. I couldn't get them to send me them. So I started marketing myself. And
so your main strategy was using kind of your guys's, you know, call it the W-2 normal job money and then recycling that into investing into real estate.
Yes.
Nice.
Yep. And with her having a very good W-2 for my first several years full time, it was a lot easier to get financing, I thought. Now that I've been in long enough, I know there's so many other ways to get financing. I don't need to get a traditional mortgage to do that. But like our first rental, $100,000 house, 1,000 month rent, 20% down on a commercial note, 15 years, and we cash flowed zero. Mm-hmm. I didn't know about buying at a discount. I didn't know about the Burr method or anything along those lines. Later on, we had more tools at our disposal. We started getting into private money. We started getting into sometimes hard money when we needed to. Learned about community banks. Community banks are awesome. There's some parts of the country that don't really have good community bank support, and that blows my mind.
Mm-hmm.
It's a win-win for everybody when stuff like that happens. Wins for the seller of the house. Wins for the bank because they're getting notes. They're helping their own community. We're getting people into good housing. Her W-2 was instrumental in that at the beginning. Now that we've been in long enough, we realize you don't have to have a W-2 to finance a rental property or to flip a house. You don't have to. People think that you have to, but you don't have to.
Yeah. How did you, what drew you to getting a rental? Like, why that asset?
Dog shit.
Elaborate.
My parents had two rentals when I was growing up. They just kind of stumbled onto them, circumstances. And one of them, I was 17. People had been in it a long time, number of years. They moved out. And they didn't let their German Shepherds out very often.
Mm.
So wood floors, dog shit, 17-year-old son, go clean it.
You meant actual dog shit.
Yes, literal dog shit.
You said dog shit, and I was like, maybe you just got bullshitted by somebody, but you meant
literal
dog shit.
Yep.
Wow.
So I'm 17. I'm spending this time bleaching the floors, doing all this stuff, and my parents aren't happy about it. I mean, there's no doubt about that, but they're not pissed. And I was like, why are y'all not more upset about this? I mean, they wrecked this house. This used to be our house. Like, well, we're not happy about it by any means, but they already paid off the mortgage. Wait, what? So this is like free money from now on? My parents don't remember this conversation. I remember it plain as day. They're like, well, not really, but I mean, kind of. And that just put the seed in my mind. So that first rental that we had to put 20% down. We had saved. We had money sitting in a savings account earning 1% or less. I don't remember.
Yeah.
I was like, Amy, why don't we put this money to work for us? Let it start working. I wasn't listening to podcasts back then. People talked about it. I was like, let's make it work for us. Well, her dad had a bad real estate investing situation back in the early 80s with some stuff that went bad, and somebody I think went to prison for fraud. I mean, it was a bad situation.
Well, in the 80s was a hard time.
Yeah. So she always grew up that no, real estate's not, no, it's too risky. And had some convincing to do to her for it, but was able to convince her. And then that first rental, since we weren't, I didn't buy it right. I, you know, didn't invest in it right. It was kind of hard, but we had that first flip and that really helped. And then we sold that rental. It had appreciated from 100 grand to 120 grand.
Mm-hmm.
So we had some money to come out of there, and it was like, oh, okay, this really can work.
So how did you find the flip? Like, how did you get a flip to work, but you didn't get a rental to work?
The flip, I wasn't listening to podcasts then. I got to think about that.
I wasn't listening to podcasts. Stumble into it? Like a family or a friend?
No, I found it online on an auction site. Was looking for one. I wanted to flip it. We were probably watching HGTV something back then. I don't remember. but we bought one, and it was a foreclosure that had graffiti, more dog shit. Fell through the ceiling on that one. I busted my head open, literally cracked my skull on a cabinet one day, stepped on a nail. It was gnarly. It was a train wreck, but we made money, and took us like 6 months to do it and then 6 months to sell, because it was before the market was good.
And it still came out okay. Ground.
Yeah, we still made money.
What would you attribute to? Because it sounds like it kind of at this point, right? You stumble on that first flip, you stumble on this first rental. You kind of get those dialed in, you turn around, you sell the rental, you close on your flip, you got some cash going in. What do you attribute that first level up or kind of that shift into, okay, hey, you know, this is kind of like a cool little hobby we're doing, mm-hmm. but now let's double down and make this thing legit. What did that transition look like?
It was a couple things. Credit to Bigger Pockets. I started listening to Bigger Pockets a lot back at that time. Red Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and those were a huge catalyst. On the flip side, with our kids and their medical issues, for quite a while, we had to fly up to New York City for healthcare for one of our daughters. That's where her surgeon was. She had an open wound on her back for over 2 years after spinal cord surgery. I had a total of 7 surgeries. Hmm. And W-2, when my in-laws still owned the company, because it was a family company, mm-hmm. they worked with us. They were great. But once they sold, that wasn't going to be able to happen anymore. As you can imagine, with a young kid going through stuff like that, she had a lot of, I don't want to say psychological problems. That makes it sound bad, but she needed to talk to somebody.
It took a mental toll.
Yeah. She needed to talk to somebody. So had to take her to that. Our other kids have some medical issues, and I needed that flexibility. I tried taking a job as a consultant for information security. It was great. I had unlimited PTO, which just meant do your work before you take off. And we found that I was taking care of the appointments with the kids and looking at real estate, trying to find rentals, trying to find flips during the day, and then working at night or not working for a few days. Then at one point I had to work for 50 hours straight to get a project out because I'd kind of kicked the can down the road.
Yeah.
Kids had some more health issues come up, and I really had to step out to do that because Amy's job was really, really good at that point. When they first sold, the new company wanted her basically there from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. every day. And we knew it wouldn't last either because it was PE, and eventually they start pulling stuff in. But I needed that flexibility. We needed that flexibility. It wasn't I. We needed that flexibility, and real estate gave us that ability.
So what time frame did you move over full time to take over and just do real estate?
That would have been in 2016, beginning of 2016.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what did that first 6 months feel like?
Scary.
Yeah.
It was very scary. We bought into a franchise system initially. I don't think I've ever told y'all that. Just because I didn't know how to get things going.
What is that like, buying into a franchise system?
There's some good and some bad. It's delivered as a business in a box. And there's some benefits to that. You just write a check and marketing's done for you. Well, there's good and bad there when they're making money on the marketing that they're selling you. there was a community, but nothing like what I found is outside of a franchise system. So it got us going, got us moving, but we tried to sell our franchise a few years later. and go our own route. We couldn't even sell it. So we ended up having to pay to close it.
Mm. And that transition from going in this franchise, when you're having it, like at this point, how many projects are you working on? Are you still working in projects yourself, cracking your head open on cabinets and stepping on nails? Like, what does your day-to-day look like when you're in that, when you take ownership of that franchise and walk that out?
Great question. When I first started the franchise, it was just me. And then I want to say 7-8 months later, I hired somebody to kind of help with back office stuff and take those lead calls because I hate answering the phone. And then a year or so later, hired another buyer, hired another acquisitions person, and just started kind of growing it. I don't remember when we left. I don't remember how big our team was, but I wasn't actively buying anymore. I was working on what I like of the operations side and the kind of troubleshooting side, the figuring out the problems, getting that stuff solved. I'm good going and talking to people, but it's not my passion.
Right. And so you guys closed down that franchise. At that point, my guess is you guys have this fairly dialed in.
Yeah.
I mean, what did dialed in look like for you guys in terms of your deal flow maybe, or just like the comfortability of life? What did that kind of like look and feel like when you took that leap?
Our deal flow, ironically, when we closed our franchise was April 30th of 2000.
2020.
Sorry, 2020. Yes, thank you. We didn't go back in time. So COVID. Right when everybody was freaking out and our deal flow with the franchise just dropped. But before that, we were doing 5, 6, 7 deals a month, spending upwards of $20,000 a month on advertising. And it was stressful at first because we couldn't start marketing our new company until we had that franchise closed. Otherwise, there were going to be conflicts and they could come back and sue me. And I 100% believe they would have. So our deal flow started real slow. We started using mail. We started hitting those things, started getting the phone ringing, tried doing some outbound. It's not my skill set. I'm not a people person, so that wasn't the best for me. I joined a mastermind, and that mastermind was very instrumental in us being able to make that transition because I knew nothing about marketing. At that point in time, and I've changed my tune, but in that point in time, I was kind of anti-mentor, coach, just had an incorrect stereotype in my mind, I guess the best way to put it. And so being around those people and being able to talk to them, how do I do this? How do I do that? You know, that helped a bunch. We scaled up in 2022. We were doing 20 deals ish a month, sometimes up to almost to 30. And
holy cow, that is so many.
Primarily, and give a breakdown real quick on those 20 or 30 wholesale flip. A mixture of both?
A mixture of wholesale, flip, keeping them as rentals, wholesales. In 1 year, I think it was 2022, we added 40 rentals to our portfolio. Oh, and it was just because that's what was being presented. That's what we were finding. Let's do it. I had a hard time. I've always had a hard time wholesaling something that I can take a little bit more risk and turn it into a rental or flip it myself. I've always just had a mind block on that. We had a good sized team and we had our own construction crews and I hated going to work. And Amy too, she hated it. It wasn't us. So we got caught in the let's do bigger, let's do more. And we've since scaled it back. We have a smaller team, 6 or 7 of us. We do 4, 5, 6 deals a month. The last year or so, most of them have been wholesales or flips. A few wholesales here and there if our crews are backed up, but we found that happy medium for us. And that enables me to not be in the business very much. Probably about 10% of my time is actually in our real estate business. The rest of the time is on other things.
And I want to transition to that. I mean, we're grateful that you could be here. The idea of either of us flying to Oklahoma City to go to an event and go on a podcast is kind of out of the picture.
I thought you were coming on Tuesday.
Scratch that. Just wipe that on the video. No, but it's really cool to see that. And I think for both of us, we've transitioned away from how do we make $1 billion to how do we make a comfortable living in the least amount of time. And it's interesting because the way I met you was not about how successful of a flipper you are. I was actually blown away, and I told Cade this coming back from Investor Fuel, was talking about your skill set on the operations side. And so at what point did you start taking this venture on Pete and developing what I would consider to be a fantastic CRM that we are considering for our team?
It started with me just hating inefficiencies I saw on our team. You know, we had our CRM, we had a phone system, we had a task management system, we had Google Drive, we had this, we had that. And an easy example is pictures from the seller were stuck in our phone system. Sometimes our manual workflows would work right and they would download them one at a time, then put them somewhere. Sometimes they wouldn't. But then we end up later on, we flipped it and Amy is our realtor, would say, okay, here's the forms you have to fill out. How's the roof? Shit, I don't remember. How am I going to find that out? Okay, I have to go through transcripts. I have to go through notes in multiple systems because we may have found out when we were in the rehab how old it was. We may have found out here. We may have found out there. And I hated wasting my time. I hated seeing my team waste their time. And it really drove me nuts when somebody would, you know, not put street in an address somewhere, but they put it over here. And then we try to have Zapier pull something and nothing matches up. It killed me. And so I just started making tools to help ourselves run more efficiently, to pull those together. And I decided I was going to make something that we were only going to use internally. Amy very quickly was like, hey, you should consider doing this for other people. There's a need for it. And I was like, no, I don't want to. I don't want to have to worry about what it looks like. It's going to be ugly as hell, but it's going to work well. And she kind of let me roll with it. And eventually it was after talking to enough people, just not asking about would they be interested in something like that, just talking to enough people in the industry, we all had the same problems. We had people spending a lot of time every day calculating how many tasks they completed because their CRM is task-based and they have to mark tasks as complete, but there was no way to see the number of tasks. So, oh crap, how did I end up completing this many? Let me go through my phone calls. At one point, I found out, and I lost my shit, some people on our staff, over the course of a day, were spending 30 minutes calculating their KPIs. Now, it wasn't all at once.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm paying you for this? This is all in software. Why the hell can't I get this out of here? Disconnected systems. We couldn't get it. So eventually decided, all right, fine. I'll put my money where my mouth is. We hired some developers, got a team going, and built Pete up from scratch. We thought about doing a Salesforce or a Podio, but...
I'm glad you didn't.
Yeah.
Me too. I never was a big fan of Podio. It can do some great things, but it wasn't for me. And Salesforce, same thing, but you build something on a platform and they make a change.
And then everything breaks.
Everything breaks and you have no notice. You don't know what's coming. And coming from software development, I knew that I'd be able to, and I developed some of it, but we had a team that did most of it.
I have a two-part question. We have spoken recently about the core functions in your business. And in the sales and acquisitions episode, we talked about a CRM. And we gave our kind of definition of what a CRM is, what it's used for, why it's important, X, Y, and Z. I'd love to hear that from you.
Okay.
And now that people have some context as to John, the guy who bought a rental and a flip, to John running 20 and 30 deals at a time each month, you have a breadth of knowledge at kind of what tools are needed at what scale. Can you kind of touch on that as well after explaining what a CRM is?
Yeah. A CRM by itself, customer relationship management, is just a way to keep up with your customers, whether it's a seller, whether you're, you know, whatever industry you're in. In ours, sellers of houses. Keeping up with your notes, when you talk to them, those records, tasks, what you need to do to keep up with it, and then having that record so you can go back. Because most of the time, you're not going to buy a house first time you talk to somebody. And it can be 6 months, 9 months later, and being able to quickly pull up notes and, how's your dog doing? Your dog was kind of sick. You know, is Fido doing well? That makes a difference when you're talking to people. And so that is what a CRM by itself is. There's lots of things you can plug into a CRM. You can plug in phone systems and texting and email and
But at stuff. Its core.
At its core, that's all it is. It's a tool to keep yourself organized. My first CRM was Excel. Mm-hmm. It was before people were using Google Sheets. No, there was none of that. So it was an Excel spreadsheet that I had to upload or had to do, or, you know, fill out, then upload. And then, you know, when I had my first teammate, they had to, oh, hey, did you sync the file? Oh, shit. Okay, wait, hang on. Let me get pulled over. Let me do this. Excel was.
So, no, we're laughing because in our program with the coaching students, we were tasked with what CRM can we give for free, kind of a mid-tier, and then what's like a at a certain level, what product we recommend. And it was very funny because at the core level for that free tier, we both said, use Excel.
I used it for a little while. And it got to be too much for me because I tracked a lot of stuff. I love data. And I ended up with, I don't know how many columns, way too many columns.
You were in the triple.
I wasn't in the triple letters. I wasn't in the triple letters, but I was pretty far into the doubles. And I realized I needed to pull it in. We just converted somebody onto Pete last year that was running a successful wholesaling and flipping business from Google Sheets.
Is he from the Central Valley?
No.
Because we know a guy who is running.
He started on that.
He was on Excel until very recently, and he was doing a lot of deals. And he was like, we asked him one day, what are you using for your CRM? And he said, Google Sheets. And we were like, at your volume? You know,
crazy.
But I'm curious to hear your opinion. When does it even become important to get on to like a, you know, a paid for tool that helps?
Part of it depends on your system or on your team. If you have more than one person, you have to have something so data can be translated, be brought over between people. If you're by yourself, just whatever works and you're going to actually use. You can have a Ferrari in the car, but if you're up on Big Bear, it's not going to be much of a use for you. You need to have something that's going to work and do the job that you're going to do, and you're going to actually use it. If you're intimidated by it, or if your team is intimidated by it, it's not worth it. Doesn't matter if it's perfect. It's not worth it.
So it's really not a scale thing. It's team members.
A little bit of both. When you get to a large scale, you definitely need more systems and more automations in place.
Yeah. What I want to rewind a little bit and ask is, I can tell you are a textbook integrator, and I can tell you've read probably Rocket Fuel or are familiar with the term integrator.
Yep.
And everything you're talking about, right? Like, yes, I can talk to people, and I did talk to people, but I absolutely hated it. Like, I'm very similar to you in that regard. That's why our partnership for our rentals work, like, textbook integrator, textbook visionary, right? But I'm curious, especially for the other people who are listening, right? Because I'd say it's more uncommon to be an integrator in this business that is filled with a lot of more visionary type people, more people who love going out, talking to sellers, and taking care of business. How did you, as an integrator, even start to build up your business to doing 5 deals a month when you're not that primary guy who loves talking to sellers? How do you do that?
Interesting observation. Yes, I am a very, very textbook integrator. I also do have a lot of visionary aspects as well. Ironically, Amy is pretty much the same, but she's a little bit higher on the visionary side than integrator side. It's what I had to do. We can all adapt ourselves to different situations if we need to. It's a matter of how much energy is it going to take out of us.
Yeah.
And I can do it, and I needed to, but as soon as I was able to step out of that role, I stepped out. And there's been times in the business that we've lost team members or whatnot, or somebody's gone, and I've had to step into that, and I do it. But good Lord, at the end of the day, I'm just like, oh, all my energy strained.
Yeah.
It is so refreshing to hear somebody have the same feelings that I have felt, because that's it. That's exactly it. 100%.
Well, and the funny thing is, it's not that I don't like people. I'm just not a
people person.
I like helping people. I like that aspect, but
it's exhausting.
It is. You know, it wears me out.
It's funny too that you bring up your background. My family's all cybersecurity. So I come from a big family of 7. I'm the only one that's not in cybersecurity. I'm in sales. And so when I talk to the clients, like, you know, sellers, they always are like, wow, you talk differently than a lot of the salespeople we meet, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, I wasn't around salespeople. I was around engineers. So I always just kind of focus my sales pitch on engineering. Did I solve the problem or not? Mm-hmm. Right. I'm not here to smooth talk. Yeah. I'm here to shoot straight. And, you know, in my family, you know, you didn't really beat around the bush. It was kind of right at the line.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to hear you say you're exactly right. Everybody can be a little bit of someone that they aren't naturally, but it's the energy that it takes out of you to mm-hmm. do it.
Yep. It sure is. And ironically, my family is not information security, but my parents are accountants.
My mom's an accountant.
My mom taught for a while before I was born, but then she joined my dad in accounting practice and they were accountants. So, I mean, I grew up with that very by the book, by the numbers.
Black and white.
Yep.
What growth have you seen in yourself and in your business now that it sounds like you are in a place where you're focusing on all that stuff that you love to do and the things that you don't like aren't taking up your time?
With growth, I'm also going to say something that I still struggle with, if that's all right. I still struggle with getting out of my focus, because I get in the zone and I get focused. And if somebody comes into my office, I look like the biggest jerk in the world to them. I don't mean to, but I get kind of a scowl look and I'm focused. I'm deep in thought. So that is one of my shortcomings in it. But at the same time, I've grown a lot on being more loose, being more accommodating. I mean, Marine Corps is not very soft and gentle and care about everybody's feelings. Real world, you have to do that. So that's been one of the biggest things for me. And also letting go. Because I'm an integrator, I liked things to be done a certain way. And if they're not done that way, there's probably a reason why I want it done this way. So if somebody does it a different way, my mind goes, okay, it worked fine now, but next time the bomb may explode. Mm. And so an area that I have grown in is understanding how to communicate with people on that, how to make sure they understand why we're doing things, but then also giving people some latitude to say, I understand why we needed to do that, but in this situation we had this happen, this happened, this happened. So I went ahead and bunted instead of going for a home run and trusting them. You have to have a lot of trust in people.
Giving them the leeway and the
ability,
the
to fail.
Leash to do that and still come back.
Yep. And the ability to fail. We limit how far they can fail. Our acquisitions guy can go out and put an offer on a house, sign a contract for $500,000 for a house that I wouldn't give $2 for. Well, we've got a check and balance for that. That's in place. So he can go out and he can fail. And we'll rectify that situation rather quickly. But that's how he'll learn.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I just was speaking to two very successful agents who are having kind of a struggle getting a team up and running. Mm-hmm. They want to do it, but it's hard to let go. And they were like, yeah, it's hard because, you know, they screw things up and blah, blah, blah. And I reminded them, and you're going to laugh because it's the pot calling the kettle black. I reminded them, it's okay for them to fail and you should expect that it will happen time and time and time again. Yep. But the only way they will get to the point that you make the decision, or the same way that you make the decision, is you had to fail a lot.
And also not just say, no, that's wrong, do it this way, or no, you should have done this. A lot of times it's, and it took a while for each one of them to get used to this. I'll ask, you know, something happens and I'll be like, why did you do that? I'm sure I probably don't say it that nice all the time, even though I mean it. What I'm trying to do is understand what made them make the decision.
Yeah.
Because my logic of where my viewpoint is could be wrong. They may have made the correct decision based on everything that's happened before, and I have a different viewpoint on it. But also it helps me understand if I need to retrain or if I need to address something, where to address it instead of just, oh, no, you're wrong, you're an idiot.
Yeah, instead of giving them the answer on a multiple choice, it's going back to the question and seeing why did you pick the wrong answer.
Exactly.
I want to transition back to, because we were talking about CRM and talking about Pete and kind of how that came to be, mm-hmm. right? And it started as this internal thing. And then your wife's pushing you. She's like, you've got something here. What did the transition look like from making that strictly an internal to now being a widely available CRM for other investors to use?
It was interesting because something we tried very hard to make it from the beginning was something that could be adapted to other people's businesses because not everybody's business is the same. We're in the same business We do the same thing, but we do it a little bit differently. And at different times, your KPIs are going to be a little bit different than mine.
Yeah, not the same exact thing.
No. And so, but we also didn't want to get into the quagmire of a Podio or Salesforce where it's completely customizable. And
spaghetti code.
Yeah, and you're going to have to pay $100,000 or $20,000 to a developer to do it for you. No, that's ridiculous. Software should be easy. User experience is huge. So the hardest thing was decoupling our business and what I would have probably hard-coded in and making that adjustable. So like statuses of leads. Your statuses are going to be different than mine.
Yeah, we all use different terms and different stages.
But I've used CRMs that, no, these are the statuses. And then you have to go from status A to status B to status C. Well, I already got the contract. I shouldn't care about status B. I don't need to say that I made an offer. I got a contract.
It's assumed.
It's assumed. But a lot of CRMs don't do that. There may be people who want their team to go through that for whatever reason. Making it so that it can be flexible enough to do that.
And when did you guys take it? When did that happen? Taking it from more internal to now being what it is now?
It was after I stopped working on it myself and we hired a development team, it was 2 years from when we started that until we launched. We launched this past fall and it was 2 years of development until then. Part of that time, we weren't using it. We were using our other tools. Then once it was ready, our team started using it, started being the beta testers, started seeing that. And when we first had our team using it, it was literally just a CRM. Then we added in the phone system. Then we added in the project management and the KPIs and everything else. But it was a 2-year process of development.
Wow. You know, coming towards the end of this podcast, I've heard kind of a theme throughout it about you've been a leader for your family and your wife has been there with you also being a leader. What has it been like now that you've got Pete going, you've got a business at home? Like, how is real estate and doing this affected your ability and your wife's ability to lead your family's life how you want?
Let's pretend that Pete's not in the picture.
Okay.
As a business, at least.
Yeah.
We can work from wherever we need to work. Before you picked me up, I was in my hotel room working on things. I don't have to be anywhere specific. Our kids don't have the major medical issues anymore. Knock on wood.
Yeah.
So that's beneficial. But being able to move around and do what we want, travel when we want. We have a cabin in Colorado we like to go to. Being able to go up there and spend as much time as we want. We can still work when we're there. Amy and I are both workaholics. We enjoy working. We're never going to, I don't know how anybody could just retire and not do anything. I forgot where I was going with it, but
that has to be just such a good feeling though. Like I'm sitting here, Cade's sitting here. I know we both are at the same page where we're in a grinding stage in our life, which you've gone mm-hmm. through, you've done it. And to see somebody who started in 2016, get to where you're at in 2024. And it wasn't just some linear path up. There was no mom and dad with $1 million giving you an easy way out. It was a gradual growth that got bigger and bigger. That has to just be such a great feeling to be sitting on the other side of the table, being able to do that and come on a podcast and do these things.
It is, but it's also accumulation of a lot of things. And there's still times that we grind. I mean, there's days that, you know, I won't work for several days. You know, I've got this, that, whatever going on. And then there are times when I'm working till 9, 10, 12 o'clock at night.
Mm-hmm.
It's remembering that there's a balance. You know, I may be working on a bug or, you know, trying to help somebody on something and I'm working in the evening and my son comes in and is real excited about whatever he's programmed in Minecraft or whatever. I have to remember, shut it down, pause. These 5 minutes with him are going to be much more important and more valuable than whatever work I was going to be doing.
That's a good learning lesson.
What does your day-to-day and kind of trajectory look like for you guys now with your family and your businesses? Pete is now officially launched as of last fall. Sounds like you guys are now in a really good spot with your core real estate investing business. what's kind of walk out kind of what the next year looks like, what the priorities are, what the goals are. What does that look like for you guys?
Next year, I have a lot of, and Amy as well, have a lot of hopes of what we want to get added into P. We're not done with it. It's not going to stop with project management. We want to get all of our reasonably all of our business in P. I don't want to compete with QuickBooks. Put that there. So not the whole business, but I want to keep adding that. I want to keep talking to sellers. Like I spend an hour every week with our users, just doing a Q&A, just answering their questions. But at the end, hey, do you have any ideas? Is there anything you're like, I wish I did this? Or, hey, I'm kind of thinking about making this change. Would this help y'all at all? I like that problem solving. So over the next year, we're going to travel a lot. We're going to spend some time down in Florida with some Investor Fuel friends. Our daughters are 14, and for their birthday, we got them Taylor Swift tickets. So we're going to Germany in July for Taylor Swift.
Are you flying private?
No, we are not flying ourselves. I flew to Iceland. That is a long trip.
You have to hear that story.
We don't have time for that
today. Not on the pod, but maybe later.
Yep. And my sister-in-law is going with us, so we're going to fly commercial. But spend time with each other. Somebody asked me today, if I found out I had 6 months to live, what would I do? How would I spend my time? And I didn't have to sit and think about it like I would have at other times in my life. It was, I'd pull the kids out of school and we would travel and I would get them as many experiences and spend as much time with them as I can. That's what's important. Sorry, I got off subject. I ramble a little bit. But over the next year, continue to work with our people in our company, get them more and more refined and more successful. The more successful they are, the more successful we are. And spend time with the kids.
I want to ask you another question. If you had to start over from the ground up, because like Scott said at the beginning, a lot of our audience on the podcast, some have some deals under their belt and they've got momentum and they're kind of moving and grooving, but a lot are brand new and really have no exposure to this industry but want to break into it. If you had to start over from level zero, how would that look like?
I'd find a mentor, find somebody who can show me what to do, show me what not to do, help me avoid some of the mistakes. I'm somebody that's going to make a lot of mistakes, whether you tell me or not. I can do it better than you, I think, sometimes. But I would get a mentor, somebody to help me get going, kind of be available. I don't mean somebody that's going to answer their phone at 10 o'clock at night. That's just ridiculous. But find somebody to walk me through the path that's been there and has done it.
That is the exact advice we give.
Well, it's funny, is 5 years ago, I definitely wouldn't have said that. I mean, I had a different viewpoint, and I see the value that mentors bring now. And, you know, when I bought the franchise, it was kind of like, oh, yeah, I'm not going to pay a mentor. I'm going to pay this. Well, I had to pay a royalty to the franchise, and they didn't give me near as much support. They were supposed to, but it doesn't happen. And being with most mentors, you get into a community of people that are the same stage as you, then some a little bit further, some a little bit further, and you're able to work together, and it makes all the difference.
Well, John, it was so cool to have you on. We brought you on because when I went and met you, of all the people we met, I told Cade, I told you this today, when he asked me who was the most impressive person or what was the biggest nugget, you were very top of the list. So for the people listening who now have heard a little bit about your story, they understand you're not some software developer who's never done this business. They understand who you are. How do they get in touch with you? How do they take a look at Pete? How do they connect with you and just learn from you?
Gotcha. Best way to get in touch with me is Facebook or Instagram. I'm old, so I still use Facebook. On both, I'm on there as the Flipping IT Guy. If you don't know me, then you just read it, then everybody thinks it's the Flipping It Guy. It's the Flipping IT Guy on Instagram and Facebook. And then for Pete, it's thepete.io.
Boom.
That's it. Well, John, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it. Thanks for flying out here and giving us some good tips. And we will see you guys here next week at the Pursuit of Property podcast.
Thanks, John.
Thank you.